Thank you very much. Also, we should be thanking in advance John Haidar has been working hard to put together our liturgy. So thanks, John, for that.
Yeah. And I did forget. Okay. I forgot to thank the Red Group who provided us with all this wonderful food today.
Okay, so have we got some comments or observations? Or yeah, Liz.
Well, it struck me when the gentleman said that when you get to the end of the road, you build another road, and I was thinking, boy, that's a masculine viewpoint. Not to get in a fight here, but maybe you just want to sit down and, you know, feel the wind on your face and smell the flowers and go, oh, yeah, this is really good. Yeah, I just be. I mean, I don't know what you'd be doing another road. I don't know.
Liz, would you also say what you said about the dragon?
Well, the name of that book, St. George and the Dragon, and the dragon was a Chinese dragon, and the Chinese dragon is the name for the Chinese divinization, the I Ching. There's a lot of mythology there, I think. I'm going to read the book.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For me, the word that pops up in my mind while you were speaking, particularly looking back in my life, is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
I think about my work life, for example, and here and there I realize when I look back that I really wasn't putting a whole lot into it. I didn't have a great deal of confidence, perhaps, or was not as well organized as I should have been, or ambitious as I should have been. I can think of a dozen times like that. And I think now I'm more accepting of that rather than being critical. I can think about my wife and thinking in the past, gosh, I think she could have married better.
Yeah.
I think I'm getting past that and past it. Acceptance seems like it's
funny. It is, yeah. I like that, Jim.
My comment about building more road. there are different roads. When a little girl drowns in your pool and you feel like your life is worthless and it's come to an end, but you try to take another road. Your road is to sit and smell the flowers. That's a road, you know, and sit back and try to enjoy where you are instead of just falling into a black hole.
It's not working. Stand up and speak loudly for the time being.
Okay. I'll use my theater voice.
There.
I caught a little bit of that PBS program that they've been running during their fundraising featuring Wayne Dyer, I think probably how you know. And he told this little story, had to do with streets. And a woman was asked to write down five kind of turning points in her life. And I don't remember exactly, but it had to do with the street. And there was some construction and a big hole. And first, she fell in it twice or three times. And each stage of her life took her a long time to climb out. First, she said it was her fault. Eventually, she said, it's not my fault. And then, I don't remember the fourth one, but the fifth one was, she went down that same, fourth one, she went down the same street, and again, she fell in a hole, but she got out faster. The fifth stage of her life, she took another street.
Oh, Keith?
Okay.
Yes.
I was thinking about David Rico's talk on the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking, I always thought of myself as pretty accepting, and I date friends. And one couple of them, fellas introduced the other guy as, "This is my wife." And it really jolted me.
Mm.
That, hey, there's still things down there inside. I think Richard says that too. We're always developing. And not to make the decision, well, I'm one of the good guys. They got a shadow side.
Yeah, yeah. I think sometimes we get to that when we say, well, now I'm in the second part of life, as if we're there.
Yeah.
And it's not ongoing that we won't have more changes or more growth, hopefully, in our lives. And sometimes, you know, the things that come along do push us into the growth when we don't even want to go. So, yeah.
Your comment earlier about Congress or other people, and some of the thoughts I had, particularly around the chapter on new problems and new directions.
New problems and new directions got me thinking about more of a collective.
Oh, yeah.
Collective problem. Our collective group in terms of being in our society, in terms of being having to influence the second half. So there are a couple of things in that chapter that struck me. On page 140, talking about the need for institutions to have second half-alike people in their ranks. And the lecturers talked about the difference, having mothers in a group or having elders in a group in terms of coming to wise decisions. Mm. That really struck me. And then on page 150, nothing is going to change in history as long as most people are merely dualistic, either-or thinkers. Such splitting and denying leaves us at the level of mere information, data, facts, and endlessly arguing about the same. My facts are better than your facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
At ever higher and with ever stronger ego attachment. And I opened the LA Times briefly this morning, and I looked at the editorial page because Doonesbury is on it this page. I guess for some. But there was a little article that I didn't have time to read, which I will later, but it was on healthcare.
Uh-huh.
And all these, here's new facts on healthcare and different perspectives. And all of that jumped together for me to go, you know, all this debate over healthcare without getting to politics. What a difference in terms of second half, in terms of thinking of what kind of system do we want, and how do we want to embrace and include people, and how do we want to come from love, as opposed to arguing whether, you know, A plan or B plan or C plan, no plan is best. And if we can come from that generosity spirit, what a difference it would make in a culture and a political system.
Thank you. Amen. Thank you. Amen. Huh?
I'd like to. A lady left our community several years ago. I remember, she was very pretty and very smart. She was from the Bay Area. And she wanted to give us hope. She got up and she said, "Don't worry, folks. Things will change in Vatican III when the Pope brings his wife."
When the Pope brings your husband.
That's
what she said, or Vatican IV with Pope Richard.
Thank you,
Jane.
We could do it.
Yeah, thank you.
The opportunity to go to the Dancing Prayer Breakfast, we've been involved with that for many 30 years. But I was meeting with some Congress people and thinking of the verse in Isaiah, because we're talking about, you know, how everybody has their own stubborn, whatever, my way or the highway, and that maybe this is a time, actually, for that verse that says, "Behold, I am doing a new thing. Do not perceive it. I'm making a way in the desert and streams in the wasteland." But we need people who are looking for the other way and praying for the other way, not just my way. And they come up with new terms to describe the same thing that you're saying.
you know, but it's the same thing. So I, yeah, the sensitivity, and that's true for all of us, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah, John.
Just hit me. One of the saddest sentences in the English language is, but we've always done it that way. Transitions, we need them, we've experienced them, and this whole series has brought, for me, a big transition, made me think more about it. And that was when I left the active ministry, the day I did that. And I was, you know, tortured at the point, you know, am I making the right decision and choice and so on. And so Wednesday night, we had Mother of Perpetual Help Novena. Now, a novena is supposed to be 9 days or 9 weeks or whatever. This was a perpetual novena. It went on week after week, year after year. But anyway, my prayer that night had been, you know, I need something that will help me be convinced and really sure that this is where I'm supposed to go. And I had written to the bishop and said, I don't want to take a leave of absence and so on. The next morning, the mail arrives, and there's a short letter in there from the bishop's office saying, as of receipt of this letter, your faculties for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles are withdrawn. Pack up and be out of the rectory. It shocked me like hell. You know, that was the answer.
Careful what we pray for. Yeah, yeah.
When we're talking about the older people getting involved in various organizations and whatnot, when you look at the animal kingdom, they had rampaging bull, young bull elephants that had transferred in Africa over to a new area, and they start tearing up villages and causing all sorts of trouble. They solved it by bringing in two old bulls, settled the guys down, no more problems.
I just wanted to add something to Father's comment about doing things. In Ireland, they have a standard joke that in government, whenever you approach them, the standard answer is, we can't do that. So now they're just approaching on St. Patrick's Day, it's RJ, because we can't do that. That one.
Yeah, Christine.
I've just always wondered if married sex has to be open to life, then why do they marry postmenopausal couples?
Well, Abraham, of course, they may be looking for the fortune. Abraham and Sarah.
You're 900 years old, there's an exception.
I didn't get to talk much about contemplation. I wonder, a lot of people I know here do meditation. I wonder if anybody has any thoughts or comments about the difference that it has made in your life. Christine?
Well, my husband...
Stand up, please.
Both my husband and I, we do meditate, and we have noticed, and until Roar spoke about it, we couldn't quite figure out what was going on, but we used to feel totally at home with all his siblings, and now it's becoming very strange. We don't know what to talk about anymore.
Mm.
And I thought of Roar when he said, it's a lonely place, a happy place, but you're alone, but, you know, it can get lonely. And we can't talk politics, we can't talk religion. And it always boils down to sports, and I it's a sad thing. It is a, but on the other hand, it's also, we're never bored, you know, at home. But I don't know what quite to do about that. You're supposed to enjoy everybody and strange thing. You know, we don't look forward to the gatherings anymore.
They did say your life would expand, but your friend base would be smaller.
It's happening. I think we have been labeled forever New Age. Nothing we can do to get off that label anymore. You know, we have tried to talk very calmly or just bringing issues up, and it doesn't go anywhere. So I don't quite know what, how to go from here. You know. A real vacuum.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Tony.
You'll find a way.
You will.
It'll work out. But for me, I had a serious meditation practice for about 8 to 10 years, and I don't meditate anymore. And I was thinking, so when you brought that up, I'm like, okay, why not? What's happening? I think my meditation has just changed. And that's, it's just, I do it differently now, and I don't sit. It's more like I take a walk every day, and I require to be alone when I take my 30-minute walk. So I think that's probably it. But the thing I noticed about, it took me, I'd say, that long for me to start growing up. I needed that time to even know that I was a person, alone, not connected with this other group. But actually, I wanted to say something else. I wanted to, you were talking about the shadow, and the day after the last talk, I had a dream, and it's to be about this, I always would dream that I would lose my husband. My husband and I would be in a dream. And he just like disappear. He would just disappear, and I would be in agony. I couldn't find him. I couldn't do anything. And this dream, the first part of the dream is I'm lost in school. I can't find the class I'm supposed to go to, anything like that. And so a young woman befriends me. And I was telling a friend of mine about this, and I said, you know, she's my positive shadow. And she said, how do you know? And I said, I just know. She was there to help me. And in the end, my husband comes and helps me find whatever. I mean, it's such a shock. I believe this is the first time that's ever happened. So you never know about this man and woman thing. And I personally support the not needing to go down the road. And I wanted to say that.
Yeah, come.
You know, we were talking about how you live life forward, and you understand it backwards.
Yeah.
It brought to mind music, of course, which I devoted much of my life to. But in this particular instance, there's a form of music that developed in the 18th century, and we call that the Age of Reason and Rationalism and so on. But this particular form of music is, again, you never know what's coming in music, you know, until you get there. And you only know what came because you have a little bit of memory of where you've been. So this form of music is called sonata allegro form, and it reconciles differences. It begins with a main theme like da-da-dum, da-da-dum, da-da-da-dum, right? And then after a while, suddenly you find yourself in a whole different key, with a whole different theme. Sometimes they call these themes the male theme and the female. Sometimes they call them the A and the B theme. And then after you get to a certain point, the composers would mix it up. They would say, I want to take parts of this, and I want to put them in counterpoint with parts of that. And so you get this weird free section called a development section, where it mixes up the different. Anyway, I didn't say it exactly, but it plays the themes. And you couldn't do this unless you've been there, you see. And then finally, at the end, it resolves and it plays both the themes on the same key. That's the end of the
movement.
The Squiggly Park? Oh, it can be anything. It could be lascivious public civic development.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting parallel to a little bit of what we're talking about. Yeah. Tom, I've never seen you in your teaching mode before. I thought I was a musicologist, and you taught at Ohio State.
I have a doctorate from Yale that goes back to 1970.
Yeah. That was neat. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you want to love the elites, Tom?
You spoke about AA. I have 13 years in AA. And you're talking about mixing. The most amazing thing about AA is that it's a daily miracle. Of every kind of different story, different circumstances that are brought together under the auspices of, and this argument is continuous, a higher power, and a miracle occurs every single day. Everybody in that room receives the gift of a miracle for 24 hours. Whenever anybody says, all I need to see is a miracle, they need to come to an AA meeting. And the range from the one who just came in today to myself, 13 years, and a friend of mine who's got 34 years, is unbelievable. And if you want to know the biblical reference, go to St. James, the fourth chapter. Come together and be honest with each other and you really heal. And it's true.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I was thinking of Mary Sue and her meditation when you did the announcement about congratulations on your twin grandchildren. But when I used to go to meditation at Mary Sue Anderson's house on Monday mornings, and one of the things I noticed in doing that is that a lot of things come together. There's a synchronicity, I suppose, that things that I was thinking about or that I needed in my life kind of came together. And I mentioned that to her, and she said, oh, that happens, she thought, with meditation. And one of the things that did happen out of that sort of thinking, I think, was that back in 2008 when... Obama, well, I guess 2009, January, Obama was going to be inaugurated. And about 2 weeks before that, this has never happened to me that I can think of in my life before, but I woke up at 5 in the morning and heard a voice, not really, but, you know, it was like in my head. There was this very clear telling me that I should organize this prayer thing for Obama as he began his time in office. And, you know, it was such a time of hope, and people talk so much about hope, but it was really clear message. You know, it said, you know, it should be in the sunken gardens at the courthouse, and you should talk to this person, that person. It should be a diverse group. It should be multicultural. It should be intergenerational. It should be LGBT. It should be, you know, the coming together of all of us in a prayerful way for a man who, you know, we were also worried about, you know, was he going to survive in this or what was going to happen. And so like you do, then you get up in the morning and think, well, for heaven's sake, I couldn't possibly do that. But I went to church that morning, and I was going at the time, it's Church of the Beatitudes that I go to, that has a Roman Catholic woman priest, Suzanne Dunn, and we were meeting in her place at that time, and we had dialogue homilies. And so I mentioned it to the group. I said, you know, I had this kind of dream, kind of voice. And afterwards, like three of them came up and said, do you want any help on that? We'd love to help you. And so then, you know, just escalated. Martha, who's standing in the back, helped out with getting Trinity Episcopal. It happens that the sunken gardens cannot be used at that time of year because of the ground not being good. And I thought, what's another central place? And Martha said she'd ask. And she got, on a Monday night, Trinity Episcopal, and we had a Chumash elder bless the place. And I mean, it just all fell together, and that has got to be the spirit. You know, it's no way that that wouldn't happen without everything. Yeah, Jeannie.
Could you do that again?
Boy, if it came together that easy, I mean, it was just asking people if they would help. And, you know, Jewish Health is a blessing. And it was just so easy to have people there. And Mark S. and the pastor at Trinity was so darn welcoming. And, we didn't know whether, you know, my family, you know, I could probably bring 10 in, but we didn't know. If, but the place was full, you know. Yeah, Liz.
I'd like to second that.
Yeah, but Michael.
I'm just realizing that I know some people are rather new to our group, and they're not familiar with what the Beatitudes Church is. Not church, but community is. Maybe you could just give a little bit of background.
Sure.
Would that be helpful for some?
Yes, it would.
Yeah. It is a group that started, I think now, gosh, we must be getting to the fourth year. I was not part of the original, but there was a group of, it was actually all women in Carpinteria, and they went to St. Joseph's Church, I think. And it was just a group that got together, and they called themselves the Women of the Willing Disturbance. And one night someone came to their meeting, and there was about 12 of them, and someone said, would you like to go to, I think it was La Casa, and hear about, what have you got? Oh, there's that, yeah, those are little bookmarks from Beatitudes. Would you like to hear about Roman Catholic women priests? And so they did, and they said, you know, they walked on from that moment and never looked back. That when they went to dinner, some of them after that meeting, and they all said, Suzanne should be, Suzanne is a woman religious, and they said, Suzanne should look into being ordained. And Suzanne wasn't with them, so they... Well, name the person that isn't there. But no, Suzanne, really. And so then they told one of the women with them that does, she and Suzanne lived together. And so she said Joanne had to go home and tell Suzanne that she was chosen. And from that, she did go on to ordination. Yeah.
Don't forget that Suzanne had not told them that she had been thinking of it herself, but would only do it if she was called by the community.
Yeah, yeah, and she did. So she figured that was an answer.
Yeah.
To, so she, yeah, it was, and it just went on from there. But the, it goes back to 8 years ago when they ordained six or seven women on the Danube, you know, so that it was off. What was it, neutral ground, is that what you call it? So, and done by a bishop in the Catholic Church. So they say, you know, we are in line. And, of course, the church is saying, no, we truly aren't in line with Rome. But we see that...
But you haven't excommunicated.
Not here, not locally. The bishop, when Suzanne went to him, said, well, let's just see what happens. And, yeah, Carol.
I have three short things to say. Pursuant to the Church of the Beatitudes, what convicted me is listening to Father Roy Bourgeois, and when you put it in the context, ordination of women, in the context of social justice, that's when I decided, yes, that's where I belong. backing up a little bit, regarding Obama, I just finished reading A Singular Woman. I don't know if you read that, about Obama's mother. amazing. And she did not follow any life pattern that we've been talking about. It's quite startling and just wondrous. The other is personal. I spent my whole life since age 17 to 77 working, and I retired a little over 2 years ago. And now people ask me, what are you doing? And I feel kind of guilty, what am I doing? And it's not enough in this second, third half of life, whatever, to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, somehow in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so Father Michael Fish gave us the ITIM, the retreat, a couple of years ago. I think it was before I retired. And it was on the monk in the world, which is a strange thing to give women. But that's sort of what I have tried to be, not completely, but anyway. But it's just interesting to see how the life expectations of adult development doesn't provide for just being.
Mm-hmm.
Keep doing. And I'm a doer, so it's very hard.
Very hard. Doubly hard.
Go there.
Thanks, Carol. Mm-hmm. Did you get something?
Oh, I keep and probably.
You stand up and make sure that you're heard.
Well, when you mentioned that Rome didn't accept it, I think I read an article that said Rome said canonically they are ordained, but I can't remember the other word in the real life form not accepted it, but canonically the priests have been ordained and are in line.
But we're still going to excommunicate you.
Yeah.
I can't think of the term.
It's valid but not licit. Valid but not licit.
Not legal.
Story of my life.
I can't clear up the canonical stuff. But I have to respond to Carol because Suzanne came here a couple of years ago and talked about the women priesthood. And it's the first time it made any sense to me, and it made sense in the context of social justice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it made no sense to me that any sensible woman would want to get involved with the institution. But she enlightened me.
That's a good point.
I have heard a story. This was when women was just kind of starting out, and women were moving out a bit. And two women were at a cocktail party, and there was a gentleman standing there, and he said to the first lady, "Well, what do you do?" And she said, "About what?"
I just wanted to say there's a book that it's at least 20 years old, but there's a book called Mystics and Monks in Everyday Life.
Casey, you have something? Jamie Manson, a columnist for NCR, told this incident that happened in St. Louis. A nun, her name was Louise Laird, and she came out in support of ordaining women, and Archbishop Burke put her under interdict, which means you cannot go to sacraments. So Louise took her 85-year-old mother to Mass next Sunday, but then at communion time she just stayed in the pew. She didn't want to put the pastor on the spot. So the mother turned back to her and said, "You come with me." And they walked up to communion, and the mother took communion, broke it in half, and gave it to her. And then her sister, who was there, did the same thing. Then pretty soon all the Christians saw this, and there she stood with a big handful of Eucharistic hosts. The point was, hey, that's real church.
Yeah.
Now,
coming trickling down from above. Yeah. I love that.
I do. Done.
In a way, this is not proposed. It's again something in praise of Trinity, and that is this weekend, you know, we're going to have rain. Mm-hmm. They already have public announcements that they have opened their place for the poor and the homeless, together with three other places. So if any of us, you know, have an urge to do, I'm sure we could always bring fruit or anything like that to these places that are hosting the homeless, because no shelters are open now, you know, like the Armory is still open. I don't think it was open this winter. At any rate, I think they need more.
So,
Trinity is one of the four places that are, and I can't name it. The Methodist
That is one of
the four. That's
They take turns.
Thank you, Don. I get to close with one last story about St. George and the Dragon. St. George and the Dragon. As you read the story, you get the idea that George really is on the quest that's in his garage. That's his hermitage. And, you know, this is through writing and through meditation. And, you know, Rohr talks in his book about how we all need one soul friend to tell us about our own the deepest divinity and the divine image that we have in us. And so through this book you realize that Igor is that for George. And in the beginning of the book he gives George a mirror, and he calls it his hermitage mirror, and he tells him, you know, if you look in this in the quiet and you look in this mirror, you'll see your shadow side, you'll see that which is usually invisible to you in your life, and the stuff that you consciously deny in yourself. So in the end of the book, when they're finally going to go on this ultimate quest for the Holy Grail, again Igor gives the mirror to George, and he says, look at it again, take a look. And so George takes the mirror and he looks in it, and he remembers all the fears that he had when he saw the awful shadow side of himself, and all the things that he could do and all his weaknesses and how unbearable it was. But this day he's ready for the quest, and he looks in there and he can finally say, I love you. And then beyond that, you know, he takes on all the stuff from the past, not just his past, but from all the past and from all the future, and he can take all that on and still look in the mirror and say, I love you. And so Igor is watching him do this, and he says to George, turn it over. And George turns the mirror over, and just thousands of sunbursts come out of this mirror. You know, and it's just bright lights everywhere, and George's heart just fills and just throbs out to the cosmos at this beautiful image of a chalice. It's the Holy Grail. And a voice from everywhere says to him, George, you are that. You are the Holy Grail. Hear that. We're God's beloved. You know, we are the Holy Grail for one another. We're both sent and we're saint. Thank you.